This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good morning, Rutherford County. It's going to be another great day. It's Greg Tucker's show today, and everybody can't wait till he comes on. It's just one of those special days that everybody can sit back and enjoy the history of this community. And we want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. And when you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means that Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, you can reach them at 713-4639 or online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639 At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. Good morning, Greg.
Well, good morning.
Always good to see you.
Yeah, do you know who George Fenneman was?
George Fenneman was with Groucho Marx and You Bet Your Life or something like that.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Well, when you made the remark about whose show this was, I thought, well, if I'm Groucho, you must be George Fenneman.
You know, that's an honor. I like being called George Fenneman. I mean, he was always the patsy or always the
whatever. I'm impressed that the name meant something to you.
Well, you know, they say when you get my age, you can remember things like that a whole lot better than what happened 5 minutes ago.
That's true. And that was the declining side of Groucho's career. Before we were even kids, the Marx Brothers were extremely popular. The generation.
Oh, Horse Feathers.
Yeah, Horse Feathers and Monkey Business.
Yeah.
The generation that went into World War II were raised on the Marx Brothers and such. In fact, one of my father's wingmates in the Black Sheep, his last name was Harper. He was from St. Louis, but they immediately called him Harpo, coming right out of the Marx Brothers.
Didn't talk a whole lot, did he? Didn't talk a whole lot.
No, he didn't have much to say, but he carried a horn with him all the time.
and what do you call a harp? Great. I don't know what you call him, but he's a great harp player.
He was a harpist, yes, he was.
Yeah.
And I've read appropriately so, his biography, autobiography, was Harpo Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
But he was self-taught on that, and his style was so unusual that he was studied by some of the leading harpists and harp instructors in the country because his style was so unorthodox. But most of us, our generation and before, name a harp player. All I could come up with is Harpo Marx.
Hey, that's pretty good. Couldn't W.C. Fields play the harp? I may be wrong, but I was thinking that he could.
I don't remember W.C. Fields playing the harp.
Yeah.
He played Mae West, but I don't think he played the harp.
Come up and see me sometime. Is that the way it was?
That was a famous line.
Yeah.
And, of course, to me...
It was an inaccurate line, too. She never said
Mae West was a thing when I was a kid, not a person.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened to your parachute when it's coming down and it did not open correctly.
Well, what we had was the old, we now call them flotation devices, the life preserver,
right.
The head over. And, of course, when you puffed it up, it was only on the chest.
Yeah.
So you were wearing your Mae West.
Right. Well, and, that was a good symbol.
Yeah, you didn't go to the flight line except you had your Mae West on.
Well, you know, you're talking about when you brought up Groucho's name. Groucho is listed as one of the top three or four geniuses in comedy, which you look back at their old shows, and they were extremely funny. They all had a tongue-in-cheek quality the whole time that they were on the screen. And nothing ever seems to make any sense, but it wasn't supposed to make any sense.
It was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
But it still, I grin just thinking about it. I've got a collection of, I think, all of the Marx Brothers movies.
Was it Margaret Dumont? That was.
Oh, yeah, the big woman.
The woman that always gave him a hard time.
Or vice versa, it seemed like. Yeah, yeah. But, well, let's see. There was a historic event last week. The Hardy Murphy chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution rededicated the monument that they placed in the Old City Cemetery. We all know the Old City Cemetery on Vine Street.
Mm-hmm.
They had a rededication of that monument. The monument's been there 79 years. It wasn't real clear what the occasion as far as the years of the monument. But they were making it part of the last month of the bicentennial, Murfreesboro Bicentennial, and appropriately. So I don't think I've ever seen the city cemetery looking much better.
Hmm.
Parks and Recreation Department is now responsible for it, and they had it mowed and manicured, and some of their people were there. It looked real good. Interesting, though, the history of our two cemeteries. The city cemetery, as we call it, doesn't go back to the beginning of the city. It really evolved from the old church cemetery. The Presbyterian Church was right there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I went back by and read the plaque carefully. There's a misspelling.
Oh, really?
On the plaque. And they make reference to Murfreesboro being the capital of Tennessee, and they spell it O-L. Well, O-L is the building.
Mm-hmm.
If you just talk about the capital city, it's A-L. And that was one of the few things that Murfreesboro lost was the chance to be the Capitol with an A and build the Capitol with the O.
Is that like potato and with an O and without an O? Is it O and A? How does that work?
That was a Republican vice president a couple of terms back.
Okay. I'd heard that somewhere.
The church property is interesting, too. I think we may have touched on this before, but after it was discovered that Lytle's property that became Murfreesboro was only about two-thirds his, even after that had developed and an attempt had been made to resolve it, he gave a deed to the Presbyterian Church for that property there at the corner, what's now the corner of the cemetery. The property, of course, was within the Murphy family holdings. That was never challenged. The Hilliard family, the son-in-law of the Colonel Hardy Murphy, he challenged and exercised his right over all of the property that had been in that confusion, except the church. And I think it was probably in deference to the Presbyterian Church and the congregation that they let that stand. But when that property was finally literally abandoned by the Presbyterian Church after the Civil War, of course, the building had been virtually destroyed, chopped up, and used as firewood. Everything had been stripped out of it. There, at least I have never yet found any transfer of that property from the church to anyone, and particularly the city. By then, of course, there was the cemetery. But the cemetery property, other than that church corner, was sold to the city in the 1830s by Mary Hilliard, Colonel Hardy Murphy's daughter, one of his several children. She sold it for what was then a fair market price. I think it was in the hundreds. But to read her deed is also very interesting because she, of course, defines the property. And you can see that it's wrapping around the old church property. But then she says, but not included in this. And apparently a part of what's now the city cemetery behind the old church site was being used as a Murphy family cemetery. And her sister was buried there. And she reserves, she says, not included in this transfer of property is, and it's defined in feet and such. So there's a part of the city cemetery that technically has never been deeded to the city. It would still be owned by the Murphy family. Now, lawyers could argue all kinds of adverse possession and such as that because of the lapse of time and the role the city has played. But as far as deed records, that section of the city cemetery still belongs to the Murphree descendants.
You know, attorneys have always held an important place in how things are arranged and set up for the future. They're actually, and I'm not being tongue-in-cheek right now, they're actually, I hate to admit it, an important part of the growth of our society. They really are.
I think so. And property law, which is becoming more and more almost archaic and obsolete because we have things like condominiums, which will be carved out of a hole in the sky, you know, mm-hmm. a multi-something mm-hmm. or another. The old property law, the base of it was the lord or the sovereign did not want any of its holdings to be in a situation where it could not be productive. Mm-hmm. And so the property law developed to be sure that if someone died or disappeared or whatever, that there were rules by which that property would pass to others' control so it could continue to be in productive use. Today, and I guess going back in time, it falls to the lawyers to work through all that. And when we were talking about the carnation purchase of property, you could see the court was working towards a way to get that property, keep it in, you know, productive activity, even though it was tied up because of the multi-generation will that had been written. One of the things you caution someone writing a will or a deed is don't overreach, because if you go beyond what the court and the law will tolerate in terms of tying up property, it'll be voided.
You got the old hoard property, as you know, that was many, many acres, thousands of acres over there off of Old Nashville Highway. And it was tied up in one of those. And that, I don't know directly, but I have information that it was. And then I can see how a person, you know, they built the land up and they would like for it to stay in their families. There's just something really special about that. You know, John L. Beatty's farm out there is one of those that's been in the family for years and years, but, you know, passed down. You know, as right-of-ways start to become important with growth and things like that, it has a way of trumping the wheels, you might say, on the way. If someone is trying to set up a will to protect for their family's interests for generations to come, is that a doable thing anymore with so many different things happening as far as that could come in and affect your property? Especially talking about governmental intervention.
Well, it's you're crossing over into the discussion of eminent domain,
right,
which is where you have competing interests, and a public interest can almost always override a private interest. A private interest that still has the property and productive activity, mm-hmm. as opposed to I'm going to leave my property to my cat for the next 200 years, mm-hmm. and it shall be used for nothing but the cat to run free and roam free on. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not likely to stand up because it's not a productive use of the land, and the length of time is unreasonable. Mm-hmm. 2 years, maybe, the cat could have it, but it's a question of what's reasonable, given that overall we want property to be available to be in productive use.
So a person's private rights can be overrun by the interest for growth or whatever, the way ever a government sees fit. You know, I can see it in a lot of ways as a positive thing, and I can see it in another way that it's really...
And depends on
when it's infringing on what you have.
Depends on which side you're in.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that usually does not get much weight is the sentimental or the nostalgic, you know. Mm-hmm. The attitude of the law, which again is practical and workable, is everything has a dollar value.
Yeah.
And if you can't decide what the dollar value is, we'll take it to 12 of your peers and they'll tell you. And, you know, ultimately those
do
things
do they take into
out.
Consideration the what it means to the family, the historical value of the property itself?
Historical value can carry weight because of relatively recent legislation within our lifetimes. Nostalgia, sentiment, you might be able to appeal to some members of a jury, but it does not carry a whole lot of weight when you're faced with a public need, a demonstrable public need. And, of course, generally we'll defer to the executive or legislative branches as to what is a reasonable public need. So,
I just noticed in just recently that, and I talked to Ben last night, ran into him, and the Cates Farm has been put into a special
land trust,
and which that just tickles me to death, because, you know, I still one of those that I love to the historical value of all these families that I've known, and, and they go back way beyond me. That's pretty special.
I'm going to be interested over the next few years in just how that will develop. The historical value is an important part there. You know, you're talking about a farm with a history and preserving the agricultural history and such.
They go all the way back to the through the Reedy family and everything else. I mean, it's a long running trail. I'm glad to see them do that. I really am.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect what they're doing will encourage others. And the fact that it's getting some public attention and curiosity about, you know, what's being done and how. Will encourage others.
You know, that's one of the most important things about Rutherford County is the history of it.
The history and our agricultural history. I mean, it's hard to you can drive now for probably 30 or 40 minutes almost any direction, at least west and north, and you won't see much agricultural evidence. But that used to be what our county was very much an agricultural rural.
It's amazing how much cotton we're still growing here, though.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
And how much soybeans are still coming up out here. We started,
with all the growth, it's still sitting right in the middle of all of that.
The soybean harvest has just started out around Donald's Chapel. So the dust clouds.
Any particular person's land that's on it there?
The dust clouds you see is healthy. It's soybean dust.
Well, you know, one thing about being on a farm, you can tell what a person grows or raises by the clothes that he wears. Have you ever noticed that?
I think you're getting too personal. Well, what happened to our city cemetery? In 1872, the city purchased 20 acres from the Maney family and created Oakland Cemetery. You ever heard of Oakland Cemetery?
No.
A year later, they changed the name and became Evergreen Cemetery.
Well, that makes sense.
And if you want to find it and place it, there's a little street called Evergreen Street that runs into Highland, and it dead end, not dead end, it ends at tees into Highland, but across from that intersection is where the gate was originally. And the part that we now, where we now enter, the point there where the old Halls Hill Pike, Liberty Pike, which is now called Greenland, meets Highland, was not part of the cemetery. That was the Henry family property. But what's interesting is if you come straight up Jackson to Highland, right across from you, of course, now is an old part. It looks like one of the older parts of the cemetery. That was a brickyard.
Oh, really?
And it continued as a brickyard until, the turn of the century. So right next to the cemetery, which was down Highland a little bit, was a brickyard. And then next to
is
that
where
was
the real tall monuments are? Not real tall, but they're taller than the rest.
A lot of the older monuments are right in that area. Yeah. But it didn't become part of the cemetery until about 1900, right in that
People
in
that haven't been over there are just don't even look. They should go over there because it's one of the more interesting places to go in the community.
Particularly the section along Highland.
Yeah.
You're in the original 20 acres and the part that was added. But what did they do with the city cemetery when they opened Evergreen? See, Evergreen was also a city property. Mm-hmm. But at Evergreen, they appointed a commission, which continues today, charged with maintaining and operating the cemetery. The initial sale of lots funded an endowment for what we call now perpetual care, so it was maintained. It's still on a sound financial footing. But they just walked away from the city cemetery. And not only did the city more or less abandon any care or attention to it in the 1870s, it advised all the families that had, it encouraged all the families that had ancestors, relatives buried there to dig them up and move them. And the early expectation was that the cemetery would be cleared. Well, several of the older families in the area, prominent families, didn't go along with that. And although you read some of the accounts, a substantial number of graves were moved. I think it was probably less than half. And so the city cemetery, with what was remaining, was neglected almost completely until early 20th century, and then some took interest in it. It was cleaned up again. But I've always thought it...
You can answer this question, since I've wondered about this. Everybody has a cemetery they pick, and they have everything fixed up. And you presume that that's going to be taken care of throughout history. And but what happens when a cemetery fills up? There's no more land to sell there, and all those grave sites are there. And of course, family members will take care of their personal ones, hopefully for at least a couple of generations.
Well, the difference is the family cemetery that is only the family cemetery, and a cemetery that's set up with, for lack of a better term, an endowment to maintain it. Let's talk about that when we get back from our break.
Yeah, yeah, because that's always been an interesting subject for me. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Greg Tucker on his show.
Now more than ever, count on WGNS, the Midday Report with Zach Trotman. Weekdays 11 to noon on WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Jim Williams. Authorities have identified who they want to talk to for the killings of three people in Lincoln County on Monday, the deaths occurring just north of the Alabama border.
A fourth victim was found dead overnight. William Vincent Crutcher is being sought in connection with the slayings of two female adults and a child. Details regarding the causes of death have thus far not been released.
TRN's Aaron Painter. Police say in Nashville they found the bodies of three family members with extensive injuries inside a house, that in the western part of the metro. The victims were identified as Deborah Patrick and Wendy Sullivan, who were 48, 56, and 26 years old. Police haven't released word on the causes of their deaths either. In Memphis, an unidentified driver shot and killed two men outside a southeastern nightclub in the city. That happened late Sunday night, early Monday morning. A third shooting victim there in critical condition. And jury selection begins today for the trial of disgraced former Knox County Judge Richard Baumgartner. He stepped down from the bench in January of last year as TBI investigated allegations that he used a drug court graduate and a felon on probation in his court to acquire prescription pills.
With the cost of college rising every day, there's never been a better time to start saving. That's why the Tennessee Department of Treasury created the new Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. Visit www.tnstars.com to open an account with as little as $25. If you're a Tennessean and you open an account with at least $50 by December 31st, you get a one-time $50 match from the state. Plus, if you roll over your entire balance from another college savings plan, you'll receive $100 in your account. To learn about the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program, its investment objectives, risks, and costs, read the official statement available at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free at 855-386-7827. Check with your home state to learn if it offers tax or other benefits for investing in its own 529 plan. Open your Tennessee Stars account online at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free at 855-386-7827. Don't wait. Open your account today.
Network. An ex-Nashville police officer is now facing a second charge of domestic violence.
Andre Johnson was decommissioned on October 10th after his arrest on charges that he struck his wife during an argument in February. The 46-year-old was booked again on Saturday on a warrant charging him with punching and kicking his wife in April during another argument.
TRN's Andrew Warren. And a jury will hear closing arguments in the trial of the Clarksville mom accused of berating Transportation Services Administration officers who were trying to pat down her teenage daughter at Nashville International Airport. Andrea Abbott charged with disorderly conduct for that confrontation in July of last year. An officer testified Monday that before the pat down, Abbott yelled in her face she didn't want anyone, in these words, touching her daughter's crotch. Jim Williams, TRN News.
Next, it's the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
ProLift Systems is involved with all aspects of foundation repair. ProLift Systems 481-4735 has 2 decades of experience in residential and commercial construction and foundation repair in Murfreesboro and surrounding areas. ProLift Systems 481-4735. If you notice drywall cracks, doors and windows that are hard to open, cracks in mortar, or water in the crawl space, call ProLift Systems at 481-4735 for a free inspection and estimate.
Have you ever thought about who decides if a product or service meets the customer satisfaction test? Who decides if the business performs better than others? It's not the business, but the customer. Our business community knows their customers decide if they have met the test. Customers, when you have a concern, don't go away. Give the business a chance to resolve your issues. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
This is Bob New. I'm running for state representative in the 37th District. I've been a resident of Rutherford County for 23 years. I'm a registered nurse and veteran. I'm committed to the people of Rutherford County. I will work to bring good-paying jobs to Tennessee, improve our schools, and spend tax dollars wisely. Together, we can move Tennessee forward. I would appreciate your vote on November 6th. Visit my website at electbobnew.com. Thank you. I'm Bob New, and I approve this ad. Paid for by Bob New Campaign, Linda New Treasurer.
Weather-eye. Plenty of sunshine for the forecast area. Today, a high in the low 80s. We'll have a light south wind. Clear skies tonight, low of 52. Sunshine Wednesday, 82 for a high. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Faluver.
Right now, 63.
Congratulations to our birthday cake winner today, Kathy Hooper, receiving the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland, and Joel and Janie Glover. They receive flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts, nominated as our Good Neighbors of the Day.
That update brought to you by Safe Auto. You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? You'd call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO for affordable liability insurance. Drive safe, spend less. Safe Auto.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And welcome back to the Greg Tucker Show. And before I talk about one of our sponsors, I also want to say hi to Albert Coleman. I ran into him yesterday. I hadn't seen him in such a long time. And a great family history here in Rutherford County, the Comers have. And I'm just so glad to see him. And I told him I'd say hi. So, hey, Albert, how you doing today?
Do they have anything to do with swimming pools?
Kinda, yes.
Comer Construction.
Yeah. And also road construction here in Rutherford County. James was the superintendent of roads. I mean, great bunch. And Dudley's still around. So, hey, Dudley. Want to let you know that this part of Greg Tucker's show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes is a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. And from the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. And all this month, when you mention you heard it on WGNS, get free front wiper blades with a standard $29.95 oil change at Murfreesboro Automotive. All this month, when you mention you heard it on WGNS, get free front wiper blades with a standard $29.95 oil change at Murfreesboro Automotive. And we were talking about keeping up with the cemeteries over a period of time when they fill up, and how are they taken care of, because that's an important part of our history, and what are we going to do about it?
Well, the commercial cemeteries, for lack of a better term, or those that are run by, maintained by government entities, are subject to regulation. And I'm not intimately familiar with it, but it specifies that a certain portion of proceeds from the sale of lots, cemetery lots, mm-hmm. have to go into a long-term, what I call long-term endowment. In other words, it's money that's put into investment forever, mm-hmm. and the earnings from that are then to be used to maintain, literally, perpetually. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the case of a government entity that's going to be there, that usually is what happens. There have been a few cases where commercial cemeteries become unprofitable and are abandoned, and usually they get taken over by some kind of government entity. Mm-hmm. And then you have your private, your family cemeteries, which depend on the family or descendants of the family or someone hired by descendants to maintain, and as we know, unfortunately, some of those disappear mm-hmm. Over time. Some of them disappear just from neglect, and others disappear because someone wants to plant corn or do something else with the property and doesn't respect it. Then,
of course, you have a family cemetery.
Well, there are several family cemeteries. I'm trustee for one, mm-hmm. and then another one happens to overlook the metro airport. I go by it from time to time, up on a hill overlooking the airport. Mm-hmm. Both of them are maintained by descendants. The mm-hmm. one that I'm the trustee of is in the middle of a fancy subdivision, and fortunately the houses on either side, the people are proud of it. It's got a Revolutionary War veteran grave mm-hmm. in it. And they take care of it.
Good.
And call me when something breaks. And I've got a little money that the family's put together, and we, you know, repair a monument or whatever it takes. That's the best of all worlds. I know of others where there's just enough close family. The Gum Cemetery out in the southeast is very well taken care of. And I know
the old Judy Garland group.
Yeah, and I know that that's the family. Ralph Puckett, among others, has taken me out there and visited, and it's just kept very well. And if something needs to be done, members of the family get together and take care of it.
What if you buy a piece of property and it's got a cemetery on it?
You are obligated to not disturb. You don't, if you're the property owner, you don't necessarily have to go in and mow it and maintain it, but you're not to disturb the graves.
That would be pretty neat, too, if you had one to make sure it's taken care of.
Well, I've seen farms where the farm changes hands and the new owner pretty soon gets visited by some people that mm-hmm. will say, this is our family cemetery. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good practice, but it's really a reminder to the new owner that, you know, we're here, we're still looking and following, you know, the condition of this, and, you know, you need to work with us. Mm-hmm. And you can't deny access. If you own property in the middle of it is an old family cemetery, you can't deny access to it for purposes of memorials or for maintenance.
I'm glad we still have that. Fondness for
our
history.
I don't know about practices all over the world, but I was surprised in Europe. In fact, specifically in France, visiting a cemetery, and you can imagine the age in a city like Paris that's been mm-hmm. there. I mean, we're still a baby country compared to these European. I see a grave site or a grave that is obviously neglected. And it'll have a sign posted on it, like you might put up in Murfreesboro. Once in a while, you'll see a zoning appeal sign letting everybody know. Mm-hmm. There'll be a little marker and notice there which says, you know, so many days. And if the grave is not tended, improved, taken care of as they expect, you lose it.
Wow.
Now, I'm not sure exactly what they do, whether they dig whatever up. You know, and
surely not,
and put it on a garden, and they resell it. So you know, you still in these old, some of these old cemeteries, you're expected to maintain your ancestors' graves, or they're evicted. Now, I have no idea what they do.
Sound like a good movie. You could probably Poltergeist or something like that.
I do remember when they put in Percy Priest Lake. There was a cemetery that I was very familiar with. It was behind. Some of my family's was in the back part of their farm. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was the Corps of Engineers came in, and these graves were very old and very hard to read anything on the inscription. And in fact, one of my uncles had been growing beans, and that was where I was familiar with it, because we'd go out and pick beans off the gravestones where the vines grow on. And they came in there and moved those graves. And one of my cousins was there at the time out of curiosity, and I asked her later, I said, well, what'd you see? And she says, they moved dirt. Mm. Because the graves are so old, there was nothing recognizable, at least not to a teenager. And she says, they just packed up boxes of dirt and took it and put it in the ground somewhere else. But, you know, that's the obligation. If there's a, particularly if there's a public works type thing, the government, and it's the same if it's a private, if you can finally get authority to use a grave site, you're obligated to move the remains to an appropriate place. That came up with the city cemetery because when they were working the street, and I'm talking about 100 years ago, but when they were working the street on the south side of the city cemetery, they unearthed graves outside the boundaries of the cemetery.
So they didn't have map-marked graves like we have now at that time?
Outside the cemetery.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Just outside the fence.
Wow.
And
how that happened?
Yeah, they came up with several remains, and the speculation at the time is maybe these were slave graves, or for some reason were buried outside the perimeter of the actual, and then later it was fenced off. I don't think it was ever clear just what was going on because there was no markers or anything. Mm-hmm. This was outside the cemetery.
We've had a number of Indian graves that have been dug up accidentally.
I think they concluded these were not Native American graves. These were, you know, since the beginning of Murfreesboro. And they were reburied, and I'm not sure where they were reburied, but I don't think they ever identified any family, anything, and they probably were reburied out at Evergreen or back in the city cemetery without any marker or anything. But that happens, and I've heard stories about family cemeteries, particularly I suspect it might be true over here at the Lytle Cemetery, which the DAR, I think, is protecting and taking care of. But outside the Lytle family plot, they will bury the slave, those who die and such. That was apparently a fairly common practice.
Were the slave, I know there have been a number of Indian graves and people, soldiers from the wars, the Civil War, that have been buried with unknown on those. I know that there's a lot of effort put into making sure that they try to at least find the identity of the person that's buried there. But, you know, it's funny how we look at things, because to me, it's a sad commentary on what was going on when you're not able to place that person's identity there as a piece of historical record that they've actually been here. But, you know, there's other people that they don't want that. I mean, you have people that are actually go through other processes, and there's no way. But there are, I mean, there's ways to at least say that they were there. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what, I guess it's all in how we raise and how we look at things, because it's important to me for people to know that my dad and my mom were here, and my granddad and my aunts and uncles and cousins, all that. That's really important to me, and I don't understand.
You remind me of one of the very interesting aspects of Evergreen, and that is the Confederate Circle. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine what the circumstances were. You can only imagine after the Battle of Murfreesboro, the Battle of Stones River, and then the many skirmishes that took place in that area, because the Union coming in and occupying recovered most of their bodies, although a number of them were unknown as to identity. But the Confederates, frequently it was left to the farmer, the homeowner, or the people on whose property they fell. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping and assuming there was a conscientious effort by, you know, the residents to bury the remains that they would find. And in fact, they were buried all over the county. And in about 1890s, an effort was made to find all these mostly unmarked graves. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you could still talk to the people who were there, who had done the burying, such. And they were gathered together and reburied in an area, and I'm sorry, I can't tell you exactly where it was, but it was somewhere down South Church. Mm-hmm. In that area was a Confederate cemetery. And then some years later, after Evergreen, and this is the part that wasn't originally part of Evergreen, this is what was the private property there on the corner, they were exhumed again and buried with appropriate honors and markings. But virtually all of those are unknown, mm-hmm. unidentified. And there are thousands in that Confederate circle. I forget exactly how many. I'm sure some of my fellows in the Sons of the Confederate Veterans could tell us more precisely. And every year they'll have a memorial, for those thousands of unknown Confederate remains that are in that Confederate circle. But if you go to the office, it's almost directly across the driveway is the area, mm-hmm. and it's marked with the appropriate flags and such. But one of the more interesting things there, and it is in a circle, the Confederate circle. Another interesting aspect of Evergreen is the sinking creek. It goes through the middle of it. And according to, I believe it's city ordinance, the graves cannot be within maybe it's 25 or 50 feet on either side of that.
Is that creek. Like a sinkhole?
Well, Sinking Creek itself is curious. We're all familiar, if you drive what's now called Middle Tennessee Boulevard, with mm-hmm. the big yard in front of the campus school, the training school, Homer Pittard Campus mm-hmm. School, I think it's called mm-hmm. now. And there's a wet weather creek.
Yeah, it's been there forever.
Been there? No, not quite forever. That's what's interesting.
When Harrison, when I played ball over there.
Yeah, well, you're almost old as forever, but not quite. When Harrison and Black worked out the deal to put the college, the normal school at the time, mm-hmm. and got the city and the state to build what was then called the Normal Boulevard. Remember, everything west of the Normal Boulevard mm-hmm. belonged to these two developers, mm-hmm. including what now we identify as the campus school and all. Well, it wasn't too many years of normal school activity that they recognized they had a real drainage problem. All of the water coming from on east was draining into the campus mm-hmm. and essentially drowning the campus, parts of the campus. So they went back to Harrison and Black, and there is another deed where Harrison and Black gave an easement across their property, which changed their development opportunities there because they had it marked off for residential houses mm-hmm. and all in that area. They gave the college an easement, and they laid the state laid a viaduct or whatever you want to call it under the boulevard, and they dug that, what we now think of as the creek, the mm-hmm. well, the creek across their property, mm-hmm. and tied into a naturally existing creek, Sinking Creek, mm-hmm. on the other side of that. And if you go over there now, you can follow where it goes under the roads and between the houses and down through and comes out at Greenland mm-hmm. and then flows across the cemetery. So the cemetery creek is really the drainage ditch to drain the campus up there. And originally the two water patterns didn't connect, but Harrison and Black, for a price, gave that drainage easement, and of course they
it still floods there.
It still floods, but the flood is now in front on the other side of the road mm-hmm. because they drained it in there, and then it drains on out into the Sinking Creek. Looking at a map, it's hard to tell where the creek sinks, but there are a couple of places where originally it looks like it may have disappeared into a sinkhole mm-hmm. and then come up again in what we now call wetlands. Just if you're going out Memorial on the right, just before you get to the shopping center where Hastings is, mm-hmm. there's a little bit of wetlands, and that's where it's coming on through. And it crosses Sulphur Springs Road and finally runs down and runs into the West Fork of the Stones River. But it was interesting, a discovery for me. I was looking for something else, and I found that easement. Harrison and Black had to give up part of their residential development opportunities, but then they turned around and sold all that to the state for the college, mm-hmm. normal school at the time. So I'm sure they continued to come out ahead on it.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few parties over there when it rains about 7 or 8 inches. I mean, everybody's out there swimming.
Yeah, there's at least one drowning, a child drowned in there in the same situation. Yeah, this was many years ago, but at least one drowning there, which small child playing in the water, unsupervised.
Now, do we have a complete list of most of the cemeteries in Rutherford County, both families and public?
Some excellent research was done some years ago. We mentioned the Cates family. Steve Cates was very much involved in that. In fact, mm-hmm. I think he took kind of the east side of the county. But if you go to the library or through the Rutherford County Historical Society, there are very good records of cemeteries. And even records where you can see that someone went back some years later to check. I was looking at the Lytle Cemetery record, and it identifies each grave and who's mm-hmm. there. And then down at the bottom it notes that the previous survey of the cemetery found 1, 2, or 3 additional graves which have disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see even a maintained cemetery over time, those stones, you know, they don't last forever. Hopefully there's not vandalism or theft, but even over time it becomes harder and harder to identify. So right now you'd do better going to the library and pulling those records mm-hmm. than you would go into some of the smaller family cemeteries trying to read stones.
I have a friend that she couldn't find her granddaddy's gravesite, and she knew which cemetery it was but couldn't find it. We looked on a map and saw where it was, and she went out there and tried to find it on her own, and she couldn't. Yeah. So drove out there, and we kept looking, and you could actually see it from the road, and it was the marker was plain enough that you could actually see the name there, but I'm constantly amazed at how well kept all these cemeteries are, both private and the public cemeteries.
Well, many of them are, and then there's some of the what I call the commercial cemeteries that it looks like they're not trying as hard as you wish they would. And they probably have shareholders or owners, you know, they're also trying to make a profit off of it. But usually the squeaky wheel, when you complain at a cemetery that's, you know, commercial or a government run, mm-hmm. you can get some response. You know, they always say the squeaky wheel or the clean grave mm-hmm. is the one that, you know, people still care and people still talking about. I know there's if you look at the topographical maps prepared by the USGS, the government, mm-hmm. beginning back in the 30s, they mark cemeteries, and apparently we're very conscientious trying to find all the family cemeteries and mark them. Mm-hmm. Use those maps and then go to the site, and you'll find a number of them have disappeared. An example is down on where 269 heads towards Eagleville, down just below, just south of Christiana. There was some years ago a church there on that corner. It'd be on the north side of Walnut Grove Road. And looking at the map, there's a cemetery beside that church. Well, the church is gone. There's a little house built there. And there's a grove of trees and then another yard and house. And there's not a single marker. There's nothing at all that would tell you that that's a cemetery. But if you look at the map, you know that there's a cemetery there.
That's a shame. All right, we've got a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Greg Tucker.
How's it doing, Truman?
Good morning. How are you?
Howdy. Are you doing all right today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Just great. Hey, I got a question, and I don't know what the fellow's name is for sure, but you're talking about the graveyards?
Yes.
I believe his name is Talbert, Bobby Talbert, I believe. Lived way out on Bradwell Road for several years. Just went around making a study and mapping and putting down locations of graveyards, and I'm talking about family graveyards, you know, of all kinds, just been sort of forgotten. And I was wondering if Greg might know of him.
Yeah, Bobby Talbert. He died just within the last year. He came and stomped around on my property looking for, encouraged him, but we never did find what he thought, where he thought there was a grave. I think he was working from not only word of mouth, but some old documents and maps and such. His wife and children still live out there. You can find them in the phone book, Bradleville Pike, and they probably would know to what extent he did documentation, left documentation. But that's Bobby Tolbert. Used to be one of the administrators of it at Nashville Tech. Well-educated, intelligent, and he was very deliberate in his effort to find some of the old cemeteries.
Thank you. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Greg Tucker.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing. And our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the Doubletree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
Today, more and more people are insuring their homes with us through Auto Owners Insurance. We'll provide low-cost quality protection and claim service. And if you insure both your home and car through Auto Owners Insurance, you'll qualify for additional premium discounts. I'm Doran Claiborne with Claiborne & Taylor Insurance. Come by our office at 319 West McKnight Drive or give us a call at 893-5064.
You can depend on Claiborne & Taylor.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
I am True Blue. Join us as we honor the armed forces for the annual Salute to Veterans football game against North Texas on Saturday, October 27th at MTSU's Floyd Stadium. $14 to $20 tickets are on sale now.
Show your True Blue. Support your Blue Raiders. Tickets available at GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We get camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back to Greg Tucker. And this part of his show is brought to you by Larry Sims. And they're going to have an absolute auction Saturday, October the 27th, this coming Saturday, at 10:30 a.m. And it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful piece of land out there. It's 51 acres, selling in four tracts, and it's at 2925 Coleman Hill Road. And they have track one that's 14 acres and two perk sites. Track two is 10 acres. Three-bedroom perk site. Track 3, 11 acres, three-bedroom perk site. Track 4, 16 acres, three-bedroom perk site. And all tracks feature availability, utility water, bench water line fronts, all tracks, lots of road frontage. And you can call Larry at 615-300-8321. That's Larry Sims, auctioneer, 615-300-8321. And David Gilliam, the agent, 615-506-9353. That's 615-506-9353. Have a 10% buyer's premium on real estate and personal property. Non-qualifying financing with 25% down, 20-year amortization, 5% interest with a 5-year call. That is directions from going to the site will be off of I-24. Head south on exit 78A toward Old Fort Parkway, 0.3 miles, then merge onto Old Fort Parkway, 0.7 miles, next continue on to Tennessee 96 with Franklin Road, 5.3 miles, and then turn left onto Coleman Hill Road. Destination will be on the left, about 2.9. But give them a call, and I guarantee you this is a piece of land you do not want to pass by. It's absolutely gorgeous out there. It's one of the prettiest pieces of land in Rutherford County.
You know, if you were going to take a tour of Evergreen, one of the monuments, actually it's a mausoleum, it looks like a little house, is the Eaton, E-A-T-O-N, Eaton grave, because Mr. Eaton bounced twice before he ended up there.
Bless his heart.
Mr. Eaton was the founder of Union University, mm-hmm. and he died in the 1850s, just before the war. And for all practical purposes, Union University died with him. It never really came back after the war. But he was buried over in the city cemetery. Mm-hmm. And then when they attempted to continue the university, they decided mm-hmm. it would be appropriate to bury him on the grounds of the university. So he was buried, reburied, dug, exhumed, moved from the city cemetery, and reburied right there on what is now the Central Magnet Middle School campus. Mm-hmm. And then when the Women's College came along about 1908, they apparently weren't comfortable with Mr. Eaton buried in their front yard, and they moved him again with the crypt.
They should have been honored that he was buried.
Yeah,
in the front
I know.
Yard.
People react. So he's moved to Evergreen, and you can mm-hmm. find it's very close to the old where the old entrance was we were describing earlier, and it's a very substantial looking stone structure with Eaton on it. Later his wife was buried there with mm-hmm. him, but I always say he had to bounce twice before they finally let him rest in peace.
Well, speaking of rest in peace, we're going to have a memorial. And maybe even we're going to honor the soldiers that were in the I always say Civil War, but it's really the war between the states is what it should be, as you and I know. My history teacher always said there was nothing civil about that war.
I've heard some of them say the War of Rebellion, but yeah. That sounds like they were on the other side.
Yeah, they were, not us. But anyway, that's coming up in December, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's been completely set up.
The actual 150th anniversary will be the battle took place right on the New Year, so mm-hmm. it ended in the next year, but begun in 62, and I hope we have a reenactment. I believe probably the Sons of Confederate Veterans and other groups will do a reenactment, and one of the most brutal and, in my opinion, more significant battles of certainly that period of the war, is our Murfreesboro Rutherford County's real most significant event, because thereafter we were simply an occupied territory. Mm-hmm. There were skirmishes and such, but that kind of took us out of the fighting after that battle.
Do you think that it holds its place in history the way it should in the significance of the war? Because what all I've seen as far as how the war turned during specific times back then, how other battles were directly affected by what went on here. Do you think that we should be held in a little bit more as far as, I mean, everybody knows about Shiloh and everybody knows about Bull Run and all those famous battles. But, you know, the one that we had here, to me, had a little bit more significance than the other two.
Well, most people will cite Sherman's March to the Sea and mm-hmm. his path through Georgia, Gone with the Wind, as really that's when it ended, and it was mm-hmm. clear that it was over. But that started out of Nashville. Mm-hmm. They had to get through Murfreesboro and the Stones River, and they made it the supply base. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sherman would never have marched through Georgia as he did, mm-hmm. except they had the supply line out of essentially Rutherford County. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's extremely significant. And I'm hoping that not only locally, but you know, the national observance of the Civil War will include some reference.
We need to talk a little bit about it before we get to that point when you're on the show and bring that up because it is a major part of our history.
December, and I think we ought to bring some of the people from the National Battlefield out here and some of the Sons of Confederate veterans that really have made a study of it because it is important.
You know, I am so glad that they still have that. I mean, you have the Daughters of the American Revolution, but the Confederate veterans hold a major part in our history here, and their part of them is, of course, the Rutherford County Historical Society. Y'all have done such a tremendous job keeping that all up, but when you bring all of that history together, I mean, it takes me back 150 years. It really does, because people don't realize that what we are today is the significant part of it was done back then make us what we have right now.
In the history of Rutherford County, that is the most significant event.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great show, and it always is. And tomorrow at 9 a.m., we're going to have Mr. Jerry Warner on.
One of my favorite characters.
Yes. And I guarantee you, he has a historical value. It comes, some of it was tongue-in-cheek and everywhere else, but he is one of the more fun guys you can ever talk to.
All right, I look forward to hearing that.
We'll see you guys in the morning at 9 o'clock.